We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Often, when a person goes missing, it happens quickly. A little girl is playing with friends when they lose sight of her, or she gets off the school bus and never makes it home. A dad mows the lawn and is never seen again. But sometimes, a disappearance is gradual, with multiple sightings and clues that seemingly lead everywhere and nowhere simultaneously. Bryce Laspisa was 19 years old when he got into his car and drove away from his girlfriend's apartment after breaking up with her. His own apartment was 90 miles away, but he never made it home. But he didn't just vanish. Between August 28th and August 30th, 2013, Bryce was seen by multiple people, including law enforcement, and he spoke to his parents on the phone several times. But ultimately, Bryce's car and belongings were found, but there has been no trace of the young man nearly 8 years later, and this case has reached the level of infamous. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Bryce Laspisa. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back. I just want to say I like the homage to our previous cases in that intro.
Did you like that? Yeah. Could you pick out each one?
I could. Yeah. Yeah, which was really weird because I have a terrible memory.
So. You do. Thank you for joining us once again. You know, we tend to cover less well-known cases on this podcast because one of my goals is to amplify the stories that don't get a lot of media attention. Plus, you know, selfishly, like, I also worry about a case that's been done by a bunch of other podcasts because I don't necessarily want the comparisons, to be quite honest. But this is a case that's so weird that I just wanted to talk to you about it. Because even though a lot of the true crime fans who are listening right now may be like, oh my God, we know all about this case. Like, I know you don't.
Nope. No idea.
And also, Bryce is still a person who is missing and we still need answers, you know? And so, yes, it's been covered a lot more than many of our other cases, but he's still not home. And this isn't just entertainment, you know? Like,
right.
It's important to get these stories out there because even though it's been done before, a lot of people listening right now have not heard of Bryce Laspisa. Like, that's not a name that they know. It's not a name you know.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, including me. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah. So let's get his story out there even more because you never know who could be listening and who could possibly know something and have some small little piece of information that could help.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. Bryce David Laspisa was born on April 30th, 1994 in Naperville, Illinois to Karen Laspisa. Now, I don't know who Bryce's biological father is, but it doesn't sound like he was ever actually involved in Bryce's life. Bryce's dad, David Laspisa, adopted him when he was 2 years old and raised him along with Karen. Bryce was their only child, and by most accounts, he had a close relationship with his parents, like especially his mom. Bryce was a decent student. He had a lot of friends. You know, he was described as being very charismatic. And you knew when he walked into a room because this dude was like 5'11 and had bright red hair. Like bright red.
Like Carrot Top?
Yeah. Like Ron Weasley. Like, yes. Red hair. So like you couldn't miss him, you know? He was tall, like he had this infectious personality, had this bright red hair, like everybody knew who Bryce was, you know? And he was an athlete too in high school. He played both football and baseball. So he did pretty well in school. I mean, you know, not like top of his class or anything, but he got solid grades. He had friends. So it seems like he had a pretty above average high school life, honestly. Mm-hmm. Bryce graduated from Naperville Central High School in 2012. So after this, interestingly, his parents apparently decided that they had had enough of Chicago and like the weather and everything that comes with living in the Midwest. And so they decided to move to Laguna Niguel, California.
Oh.
Yeah. And okay. Laguna Niguel is located in Orange County, California. So I'm absolutely going to stereotype this place and say it is 100% as depicted in both the OC classic show
and Laguna Beach.
Exactly.
Ah, I got a reference.
You got it. You got it.
I didn't even see that show. I did see the OC though a lot.
Oh yeah, because so. It was the greatest show.
Yeah.
So it's basically very fancy schmancy.
Fancy schmancy. That's a technical term.
Yeah, obviously. And, you know, probably a pretty good place to retire. Like, especially if you like yoga lattes. That was an OC reference.
Okay, now you lost me.
I'm just saying Peter Gallagher saying yoga lattes over and over again is one of the greatest things that show gave to us.
Okay.
Yoga lattes.
Guess I missed that part of the show.
We'll do a rewatch. It's fine. I've got the DVDs. Anyway, the story of Bryce LaSpisa is one, like I mentioned in the intro, that has been told on many true crime podcasts. It was also an episode of Disappeared. In short, it has more publicity than the majority of cases that we've covered. And we talk a lot about publicity surrounding missing persons cases on this show. And obviously, the hierarchy is missing white girls.
Yep.
Then pretty missing white women. Like if you're above 18 and white, like you also have to be hot in order to get the media attention. Mm-hmm. But missing white male teenagers honestly don't get a ton of play in the media.
You also said he went missing when he was 19.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was also, yes, still 18, but technically, an adult. Legally an adult.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So it's harder for adults to get, to get coverage mm-hmm. unless you're a white lady. He did get coverage at the time, I think, because mainly the circumstances behind his disappearance were so abnormal. If it was a situation, you know, like so many others that we've covered of college students, where they're there one day, they're gone the next, whatever, I don't think it would have gotten nearly the coverage that this has. But this case has endured because it is so strange and it takes so many twists and turns and seemingly doesn't make sense at all. The case itself is like a slow motion car wreck because, as I mentioned, it takes place over 3 days, basically. Like this disappearance isn't you lose sight of somebody and then they're gone, like we've covered so many times before. 3 days is how long it took Bryce to disappear. And you know, it's ironic that this case is like a slow motion car wreck because this case also literally involves a slow motion car wreck.
Okay, enough teasers. I want to get into this now. You've piqued my curiosity, so.
Okay, good. Well, I make this aside to mention the first thing that I find odd, which is rarely mentioned as something strange in anything I've seen or read about this case. And that's where Bryce went to college. So Bryce was a 19-year-old college student at the time of his disappearance. He was an artist. In fact, he was majoring in graphic and industrial design. Since Laguna Niguel is in a metro area, and that's, again, where his parents lived, right. You know, right after high school, he moved with them. They have many colleges nearby, like Saddleback College and the Laguna College of Art and Design. But Bryce didn't go to those. And maybe that's because he didn't get in or he didn't want to go to college like right where his parents lived. You know, there are plenty of reasons why he wouldn't want to go to school there. He also grew up in Illinois. That's where he graduated high school from. That's where all of his friends were. So it would also stand to reason that maybe he would want to go back there for college, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't do that either. Instead, Bryce went to community college, which totally valid. Like, that's a very valid plan. He was planning on doing that for 2 years and then transferring to a four-year university to finish his bachelor's degree, as many people do. Again, all this is totally normal.
So which community, though?
Well, that's the odd part. He didn't do what most kids do, which is attend a community college near their home and either live with their parents or get an apartment. Instead, he decided to attend school at Sierra College in Rocklin, which is north of San Francisco and about an 8-hour drive from Laguna Niguel. So like the complete opposite end of the state.
I guess he just wanted to get out on his own.
I mean, I guess, but you know, to my knowledge, neither Bryce nor his family had any connection to Sierra College or to Rocklin. So like, how did he even find some random community college in Northern California?
Maybe it had a connection to a four-year school that he wanted to get into.
Well, and that's what I was thinking. And so I tried to research that a little bit and I couldn't find anything like that. Like I couldn't find anything about it being a feeder school mm-hmm. to, you know, some art school or anything. Because again, that does happen too. Like there are some community colleges that have partnerships with four-year universities. So if you go to the community college, your credits will transfer seamlessly.
Right.
And that may be the case. I couldn't find anything that indicated that though. Weirdly, what I did find is that Sierra College is the alma mater of Joseph DeAngelo, who is better known as the Golden State Killer.
Okay. unrelated to this case.
Yeah, completely unrelated to this case, but just a weird thing that I came across as I was researching that. I don't know what made him pick Sierra College, but he was going to school approximately 8 hours away from his house. Now, Bryce did his freshman year there, and then he came back to Laguna Niguel for the summer.
Right.
When our story really starts, it's August of 2013, and Bryce is getting ready to start his second year at Sierra College. He has an apartment up there that he shared with a roommate, and he had a girlfriend named Kim, who he started dating the previous school year. I mean, things seem to be going well, like an apartment, a girlfriend, starting your sophomore year.
And you said the girlfriend was 90 miles away from his apartment?
Yeah. So we'll talk about that a little bit more.
In between his parents' house?
No.
I mean, not...
Even further north.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He had spent the summer down in Laguna Niguel, and, you know, there are no reports of any problems or anything like that leading up to his return to school to start his sophomore year. According to his parents, the summer was very ordinary. Like, he even took an English class while he was back home for the summer just to get more credits toward earning his degree.
And one would assume that he probably didn't have a whole lot of friends in the area since they just moved.
Right, yeah.
So probably a few here and there, but...
Yeah, probably, maybe. But I'm sure not like a huge support system, right? I would assume that the majority of his friends in California were up at school.
Yeah.
In everything that I've read and seen, I haven't run into any mention of any Laguna Niguel friends mm-hmm. of his. So I'm sure they existed, but they don't really seem to play a big part in any of this.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a really good point. So Bryce drove back up to school about 2 weeks before the fall semester started. Classes that year began on August 26th, so likely he had to start paying rent on August 1st. So, you know, why not go back 2 weeks before classes start? You've got your apartment, you know, you can get situated, you can see friends, you can hang out.
Have like, some parties.
Exactly, whatever. Right? Yeah. Like be out of your parents' house and, you know, have some time before you get back into the daily grind of classes. Mm-hmm. And that's like what it sounds like he did. I mean, he hung out with his girlfriend, his friends, he played video games, like he did normal college stuff. But soon after Bryce returned to school, his friends started noticing that he was acting a little off. Now, they hadn't seen him in a few months, but the Bryce who came back to Rocklin wasn't the Bryce that had left. According to his friends, Bryce had started drinking a lot. He was also not acting like himself personality-wise. It was so bad, in fact, that his roommate called Bryce's mother. Now, you were roommates in college with your best friend, and his mom was like another mom to you. You knew her very well. You know, for years prior to college, right? Mm-hmm. And so because they had just moved to California, you know, I don't know how well his roommate knew Bryce's mom, but certainly not for years.
Yeah.
How bad would it have had to get for you to call George's mom when you guys were sophomores in college? And I know you weren't both sophomores together and you didn't live together at that time, but like hypothetically.
I mean, fast forward 1 year and we were living together.
Right.
So it would have, yeah, I mean, really bad. Like potentially.
If you had a relationship with her, yeah, you know, like yeah. You knew her.
Yeah, she was my second mom.
Exactly. So like you would have felt comfortable talking to her, oh, yeah. I would assume, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But like, how bad would it have had to have gotten?
I wouldn't want to narc on my best friend for developing a drinking habit. So, yeah, I mean, if it was that bad, I mean, that's pretty bad.
Right, I have to imagine. I mean, that, to me, was the first thing that really, really struck me when I first heard about this case. Like a college kid's roommate called his mom because he was worried. Like that's not just like...
worried about his drinking.
Yeah. And about the way he was acting. Because it wasn't just the drinking. The drinking was a big part of it. And I think, but I do think if it was just the drinking, then he would have just let it go or you know... he was just acting so unlike himself that he called. So right now we're talking about Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. This is the second day of classes. Bryce called his mother the day before and had what seemed like a normal conversation. Like he told her all about the classes he had taken that day, you know, just things like that, like normal starting the new school year stuff. According to her, there was nothing odd about that call on Monday. But the next day, Tuesday, Bryce started texting with his girlfriend, Kim, and he broke up with her.
Just like out of the blue?
Yeah. And like so out of the blue to the point that Kim didn't even realize what was happening. They were texting and, you know, I don't have a lot of what they were texting. But at one point, he texted her something to the effect of, "You'll be better off without me." And Kim was like, "Wait, are you breaking up with me? Like, what does that even mean?" And he said, "Yes, I am."
Hmm.
Again, they had just gotten back to school. He had been back for like 2 weeks. So this really seemingly came out of absolutely nowhere. So on Tuesday, Bryce breaks up with his girlfriend. And on Wednesday, August 28th, his roommate Sean calls his mother. Now, I don't know if this information came out in that call or if it came out later or exactly what the timeline is for what Sean said in that first call and what he eventually tells Karen, Bryce's mom. But he does tell Karen at some point that Bryce started acting strange after he and another friend had decided to stay up all night and play video games. In addition to drinking, Bryce took a drug called Vyvanse. Now, this isn't a drug I had ever heard of. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Yeah, okay. It's prescribed to people with ADHD, so kind of like Ritalin.
Okay.
So if you have ADHD, it helps you focus. But if you don't, as the detective put it in the Disappeared episode, it's basically meth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a few hours after Karen got off the phone with Sean and started to like really kind of understand that something weird is going on up in Rockland, she got another phone call. This time it was Bryce. He was at Kim's place. Kim is his girlfriend who he had broken up with the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is 90 miles north of his apartment.
Right.
I don't know how Bryce and Kim met. Just as an aside, I had assumed that they went to school together, but she lived 90 miles north up in Chico. 90 miles is a very long commute to community college.
Yeah, for sure.
So like, I don't know. I mean, it was 2013. I guess dating apps like were kind of a thing. I have no idea. But in any case, that's where he was. And so he calls his mom from Kim's house and he's agitated.
And, you know, they had broken up the day before, so that makes sense. But they had broken up over text the day before. So mm-hmm. what it sounds like is this is the whole come see me in person and we can talk about this type of thing. You know, like, I'm not going to let you just break up with me over text because we've been dating for a year or however long it was.
Sure.
During this conversation that Bryce has with his mom from Kim's apartment, Kim gets on the phone and she tells Karen that she's worried about Bryce. Kim says that he's not acting like himself at all. And she actually thinks that Bryce is under the influence. So she took his keys to keep him from getting behind the wheel.
Smart move.
Well, yeah, except Bryce denies this. He says that he's totally fine, he's not under the influence, and that Kim just can't, like, accept the fact that he's breaking up with her, and she's just trying to get him to stay. For Karen's part, Bryce sounds upset, but otherwise like himself. So she kind of buys that explanation and convinces Kim to give his keys back. But let's pause for a moment here and talk about this phone call, because we had to pause to talk about what it would take for you to call your roommate's mom. But, like, what would it take for you to get into a fight with your college girlfriend and then call your parents in the middle of it?
I can't imagine ever doing that.
Right? Like, yeah. I can't imagine a situation in which that would even occur to me.
Well, I mean, maybe he had a better relationship with his mom as a confidant when it came to relationships than me or you.
Well, yeah. And I think that's true because, again, she said in interviews that they were very close. And yeah, I feel like you have to be pretty close for that to even cross your mind in a situation like this. Like, yeah. That never would have occurred to me in any situation.
No, me either.
So Karen thought that Bryce was totally fine to drive. He just kind of needed to get out of that situation. But he did tell her that he had a lot that he wanted to talk to her and his dad about. She didn't really know what that meant. Because, like, again, she had just seen him 2 weeks ago. School had just started 2 days ago. And she was like, what could have possibly, like, happened? I just saw you. Like, we just talked on Monday. Everything seemed fine.
Yeah.
But that night had obviously been stressful for him. And, you know, he was far away from his apartment. So Karen just told him to get home and get some sleep. And they would talk in the morning. Karen was concerned about Bryce at this point, but not, like, overly concerned or panicking or anything like that. Well,
sure. He just went through a breakup and...
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she just kind of chalked it up to just, like, teenage drama and love and stress and, you know, like, just normal stuff that everybody goes through. And so she, like I said, I mean, she said, he'll go to sleep. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Everything will be fine. But Karen didn't hear from Bryce the next morning after he woke up. She actually heard from him much sooner than that. Bryce called her at 1 a.m., and he apparently left Kim's house a little bit before 11:30. So 1 a.m., like, he could have theoretically had just gotten home.
Right.
You know, so when Karen talked to him, she was like, oh, okay, like, he's calling me to tell me that he got home fine, like, cool, whatever. But interestingly, Karen doesn't say publicly what she and Bryce talked about during that 1 a.m. phone call.
Hmm.
Like, she says that they had it, and I don't know what she told police, you know, I don't know what she said to them or anything like that. But in any of her interviews, including that disappeared episode, she never says what was said during that conversation. But interestingly, it doesn't seem as though she knew that Bryce was not home when he made that call. It seems like she assumed he was home and didn't find out until the next day that he wasn't.
So where was he?
Well, he wasn't home, and he wasn't sleeping. Later, cell phone records would show that Bryce was still driving at 1 a.m. and, in fact, had driven past his apartment and was still heading south. The next morning, Thursday, August 29th, Karen received another phone call, but this time it was from her car insurance company. Bryce had apparently called for roadside assistance in Buttonwillow, California.
Where the hell is that?
Exactly. Karen didn't know. I'll tell you that much. Buttonwillow is a tiny town that's basically best known for having a truck stop. It's also a straight shot from Chico, where Kim lived, down I-5, but it's about 345 miles south of Chico. So he overshot his apartment by over 250 miles.
So was this a place that was like in between his apartment and Laguna?
Yes.
Okay.
So all of
it. So in theory, he's going home.
In theory, yeah. So all of this is directly down I-5. So I-5 in California, for the purposes of his route, it's Chico, where Kim lived, Rockland, where he lived, Buttonwillow, where she gets this call, and then Laguna Niguel. So just all down I-5.
Okay.
But instead of driving about an hour and a half home, Bryce drove over about 5.5 hours that night. Or at least if he drove in a straight line, he would have driven for about 5.5 hours. But that doesn't seem to have actually been the case. If Bryce had just left Kim's house and kept driving, he would have gotten to Buttonwillow sometime around 5 a.m., give or take. But Bryce made that roadside assistance call at 9 a.m. because he ran out of gas. The person who came to give Bryce gas was a man named Christian who worked at a local auto repair place. He delivered 3 gallons of gas to Bryce around 9:30 a.m. One way to look at this is that Bryce drove to Buttonwillow, got there around 5 or, you know, whenever he would have gotten there, and then ran out of gas. The repair place probably didn't open until 9, so that's why he waited so long to call. And that could very well be the simple explanation. But there are a few things that kind of make me question that. One is the fact that he didn't call his parents. This seems like a dude who calls his parents when he's in trouble or when he needs help or just any time, really.
Mm-hmm.
But not only did he not call them, but when they tried to call him that morning, he didn't pick up.
Hmm.
Another issue is that Bryce was at a rest stop. It does sound like this is a rest stop, like not the kind with a gas station.
Okay.
Just the kind maybe with like vending machines and bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very close to like a truck stop and, you know, gas stations basically. So if he had been driving with a purpose, like I'm just going to drive straight home tonight, mm-hmm, instead of going to my apartment, you would think that he would have realized that he was low on gas and stopped. And, you know, he was also on the interstate the whole time, presumably.
Sure.
The whole thing is I-5. So there would have been plenty of other places to stop, mm-hmm, on the way, but he didn't. And so my thought on this is that Bryce was upset. You know, he left Kim's, probably intending to go home to his apartment, but instead just kept on driving. He continued to drive, but I don't think he stayed on the interstate that whole time. I think he either drove around aimlessly for a while or was just sitting somewhere with a car on and didn't realize that he was running out of gas.
Yeah, or maybe he had decided to go to his mom's house and got tired and pulled over somewhere to sleep and left the car running.
Right, yeah. And that would be good because sleep is one thing that we're not sure happened,
mm-hmm,
during this.
Yeah.
And I think that does contribute to this story, is the possible sleep deprivation involved. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's close to noon on August 29th, and it's about, you know, 12 hours since he left Kim's apartment. And Bryce's parents are trying to piece together like where their son has been since they last spoke. So they call the repair shop because Bryce had used a credit card that, you know, they had given him at this repair shop. So they call the repair shop and they actually talk to Christian, the guy who gave him the gas. And so he says, yeah, I saw Bryce. I delivered him gas. You know, I gave him 3 gallons at around 9:30 this morning. But, you know, Christian didn't really like talk to him much or anything like that or think that anything was too weird. You know, he probably just thought he was some dumb kid who didn't know how to read a gas gauge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a normal call.
Exactly. Like, I'm sure Christian went deliver the gas, did not think about it at all.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have thought about it at all until, you know, Bryce's mom called him.
Right.
But he could tell that Bryce's parents were concerned. So Christian actually offered to go back to where he last saw Bryce to see if he was still there. And so Christian got back to the rest stop at around noon. And sure enough, Bryce was still there. He was sitting in the same place he had been sitting 3 hours earlier when Christian delivered the gas. At this point, even Christian's like, all right, something's going on here. This is weird. So he calls Karen back and goes to Bryce and puts Bryce on the phone. And Karen's like, what the hell is happening? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, nothing. So, you know, like, this is concerning, obviously, because again, like, it's been over 12 hours and her kid has just been driving aimlessly, seemingly,
or not driving,
like driving / sitting for 12 hours off of the interstate. But the silver lining is that at this point, he's only about 3 hours away from their house in Laguna Niguel. So she tells him to go fill up the tank and just come home. Like, he's got his 3 gallons of gas, but she's like, just go to the truck stop, fill it up, come home. We'll deal with whatever is happening. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going on, but you're 3 hours away. Just get here. And Bryce agrees, but he doesn't go home. So 3 hours later, when he doesn't show up, Karen calls him. Now, this is the beginning of Labor Day weekend. So she thinks, okay, well, maybe he's stuck in traffic. Maybe this 3 hour drive is actually not really a 3 hour drive today. But Bryce doesn't answer. She calls and she calls, but he still doesn't answer. And this goes on for hours. By 6 p.m., there's still no sign of Bryce and his parents still can't get a hold of him. So now they're panicking.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, this whole scenario just is bonkers.
Yeah, it is. And so they're like, you know, literally, is he dead in a ditch somewhere? So they don't know. They call the Orange County, which is where they are. So they call the Orange County Sheriff's Department and file a missing persons report. Now, instead of blowing them off because Bryce is a college student and it's a holiday weekend, like we see so often in these cases, they actually get an emergency subpoena to ping Bryce's phone from AT&T. To be fair, my guess is that this happened so quickly because the phone was in Karen and David's name. So they were basically able to just give permission.
But yeah, they could sign a power of attorney. And
exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, Bryce was driving their car. Bryce was on their car insurance. He had a credit card that was under their name.
Right.
So I have to imagine that his cell phone was under their account as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's
an easy way to subvert filing a subpoena to find Bryce via the cell phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because it's just like, hey, it's my cell phone. I give you permission. Right. Like, go ping it.
And there's enough evidence there of odd behavior that it's worth investigating for law enforcement.
Right. And so they were actually able to ping Bryce's phone that night. So when they do, because obviously it took a little bit of time, it's about 9 p.m. So now we're looking at about 22-ish hours from the time he left Kim's house. And they find that Bryce hasn't moved.
He's still at the same rest stop?
He's still in
Buttonwillow. Or the cell phone is.
Yeah. He's still in Buttonwillow. Over the entire day, he had only moved about 8 miles. So the OC sheriffs call Kern County, which is where Buttonwillow is, and they find Bryce parked off the interstate.
Still in his car?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
if Bryce were a child, this would be where this story would end happily. Like, they found him. He was missing. And they filed a missing persons report. But hey, here he is.
Right.
But he's 19. So police get there and they talk to Bryce. Now, Bryce sounds fine, but they give him a field sobriety test anyway, which he passes.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce also gives them permission to search his car, which we do, for the record, say don't ever do that.
Dumb move. Doesn't matter if you have anything in there or not. No, dumb move.
Never, ever give permission.
Always say no.
But in any case, Bryce gave permission so the officers search his car, and they're basically looking for drugs.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the kid's acting weird.
This is completely erratic behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, he passed the field sobriety test, so they think it's probably not alcohol, but they're still searching for alcohol as well. But now they're thinking like drugs.
Yeah.
So they search his car, but they don't find anything. They don't find anything of interest whatsoever. They tell him about the missing persons report that his parents filed and are like, hey, so what's going on? Like, you know, you're kind of missing right now. And Bryce basically tells him that he's going to go home, but he just needs a little time to himself to kind of decompress and like get ready to go home.
Okay.
So they encourage him strongly to call his mom because she is obviously frantic.
Yeah.
But Bryce doesn't want to. Like, he keeps on kind of, you know, like saying like, no, I'm okay. The officer probably doesn't want to deal with any of this shit, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, can you imagine how annoying this call must be for like the responding officers?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, I just want to go home.
Dude, just call your fucking mom.
Yeah, right? Like, so he literally dials Karen's number and hands the phone to Bryce. He's like, talk to your fucking mom. He does. And at this point, Karen is obviously happy that Bryce hasn't crashed his car or anything, you know, but again, he left his girlfriend's house nearly 24 hours ago.
Right.
And she has no idea if he slept or if he's eaten or anything during this period. So Karen tells him to get something to eat and come home. But there's no evidence of a crime. Bryce doesn't appear to be in distress. So there's really nothing the police officers on the scene can do at this point.
No, not at all. There's nothing.
Exactly. So they have to leave because everything appears fine.
I mean, he's not acting as though he's a danger to himself or others, so they can't forcefully commit him. There's nothing they can do.
No, you don't have to go home to your mom. Like, that's not a law.
So, especially not as an adult.
Exactly. Like, when you're 19, like, you don't have to.
Yeah.
So there's literally nothing the officers can do. They did their due diligence.
They did. Absolutely.
And they had to leave. But before all of this, when, you know, before the officers found Bryce and everything, and Karen was still in panic mode, she had called Christian again. And she didn't reach him, but she left a message. Christian ended up returning her call a little while after the police had gone to see Bryce and everything had kind of gotten cleared up. Once again, Christian, the nicest auto repair employee in the world. Yeah,
I mean, this guy is like the unsung hero.
I know, he really is. He offered to go check on Bryce.
Wow.
Yeah. And Karen's like, no, like, you don't have to do that. I mean, the police were there. I talked to him. He's going to get something to eat. He's going to come home. But like, Christian's like, look, I'm just going to do it anyway. This is right down the road for me. I'm just going to do it. Sure enough, Bryce is still there.
Bryce is still there.
So this time, Christian was like, all right, let me follow you to the interstate and watch you get on it. So Christian literally follows Bryce. He makes sure he's heading south on I-5 and trails him for the next 10 miles.
This guy deserves an award.
I know. So he trails him for 10 miles. He's like, okay, he's going. He's on I-5. This is what I can do. So at that point, Christian pulls off to the side of the road, calls Karen, and is like, all right, he's coming to you. This time, like, I see his wheels moving. So I'm sure Karen, you know, at that point was breathing a sigh of relief. She wasn't just taking Bryce's word for it this time. She called him several times, like several times, and asked him to describe landmarks to her and things like that to make sure he was actually heading their way. But Bryce didn't really want to do that. He kept on saying like, oh, I don't know. I can't see signs. I can't really tell. But my GPS says that I'll be home at 3:25 a.m.
What time of day is this? I'm losing track of the timeline because he spent so much time at the rest stop.
Yeah, no, he did. So this is after midnight, probably like around 1 a.m.-ish on August 30th.
Yeah, okay, all right. Because, I mean, it didn't sound like he was that far away from his parents' house.
No, he was 3 hours away.
Okay.
And so, like, he left at around midnight-ish. His GPS said that he'd be home at 3:25. Karen hears from Bryce again at 2:09 a.m. on August 30th. He tells his mom that he's tired, which, like, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because even if he had gotten some sleep along the line, it probably wasn't very good sleep.
No, and he's been in a car for almost 36 hours at this point.
Exactly. According to his route, at this point, he should only be about an hour and a half from home, but, you know, he says he can't make it. So he tells Karen that he's just going to pull over and get some sleep, and then he'll make the last leg of the journey home.
Okay.
Now, Bryce's parents obviously don't love this idea. Like, they just want him to get home. But they're also worried about his safety. So they tell him okay, and, you know, they go and try to get some sleep themselves. The next morning, the doorbell rings at 8 a.m. Karen and David jump out of bed expecting it to be Bryce. Instead, it's a local California Highway Patrol officer. He asks the Laspisas if they own a 2003 Toyota Highlander. Their hearts sinking, they tell the officer that they do. And that's when everything changes. The officer tells the Laspisas that their car, the one Bryce was driving, was found on an access road right in front of Castaic Lake. This lake is about 2 hours away from their home. The car had been involved in a crash. It was on its side with the airbag deployed and the back window shattered. It was also at the bottom of a 25-foot embankment. But Bryce was nowhere to be found. And that's where we're ending this week.
Ah, come on.
I told you at the very beginning it was going to be a two-parter.
I know, but I have so many theories that I don't want to get into yet.
Yeah?
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to know more information about Bryce's family life. I want to know more information about his mom and adopted dad. I want to get into their background.
Well, so...
Because I have some theories going in my head as far as what was going on with him.
Yeah, and I'll be curious because I do have some outside theories about that coming from people who knew Bryce in high school. They have some things to say about this relationship.
Come on. I know where we're going with this. I know what happened to him. Well, I don't know what happened to him, but I know...
I don't know, honey.
I feel like I understand the trepidation of him coming home.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Because I think at this point, when I was researching, I didn't necessarily...
It's a complete gut instinct.
Yeah.
I think he was gay and he was afraid of coming out to his parents.
What makes you think that?
Staying up all night with a friend, playing video games, you know, in air quotes, probably something that night triggered, maybe something that he'd been thinking about before, then the sudden breakup with his girlfriend, maybe he's starting to work his way through it.
Huh.
And is afraid to tell his mom and dad.
That's interesting.
I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And I will say, I mean...
It just seems like that behavior over that length of time is not drugs unless he's continuing to take those drugs. So if he had taken a pill that night when he was playing video games, like, that would have been worn off. those type of drugs don't stay in your system for very long. I mean, even cocaine and crack is out of your system in 24 to 36 hours.
Okay, well, what I will say is that there are indications that it wasn't a one-time thing.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, to just be sitting on the side of the road for that long.
Yeah.
And to be so hesitant to come home, yet at the same time, he wants to go home.
Right. Because he could have just gone back to his apartment and like been done with
and
it.
Just, like taken all the drugs that he wanted and
continued
to live his life up there.
Right.
And he said to his parents that he had something important that he wanted to talk to them about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was something life altering.
Mm.
It's just my theory that maybe he was going to come out to them.
That's really interesting.
Again, could be totally wrong.
Well, yeah. And I mean, so next week is going to be a lot about the theories that are floating around about this case. We're going to get more into his movements between the time he told his parents he was going to pull over and get some sleep and when his car crashed.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also dig deeper into his behavior prior to this road trip and, you know, more information that his roommate gave. And like I mentioned, you know, I did find a Reddit thread that purportedly has people from his high school who knew him and have some insight into his relationship with his parents. And then also just some other interesting insights about Vyvanse, the drug that he was allegedly taking.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear about that.
Yeah, yeah. So that I thought was very interesting. So we're going to talk about that next week. For those of you who are on our Patreon, you will get early access to part two. I'm going to put it up as soon as I possibly can. We've actually changed our Patreon to what I call the You're Wrong About method. Now, You're Wrong About is one of my very favorite podcasts, and their Patreon is basically give whatever you want and you'll have access to whatever we can do. And so, unfortunately, I don't have the time to guarantee an extra episode every month for the top tier fan club members. So we're just going to make everything the same and I'll do what I can. So if you're already on Patreon, please feel free to adjust your tiers as you see fit. I'm trying. Like, buy a house for me and we'll do more shows.
Well,
that's probably actually not
true. No, that's the opposite, because then she'll be busier. Yeah.
But buy a house for me anyway, and I'll do my best.
And maybe we'll get some more bonus content up there.
Yeah, I'm going to try. But stickers will still be available for $5 and up, and t-shirts will still be available for $20 and up, just because like the way that Patreon works with actual physical merch, I do have to stick those at particular levels.
What are our t-shirts and stickers look like?
Kaylee has a sticker.
Do I have to go on Patreon and get one?
Yeah, you have
to
subscribe. Use your personal account, not the joint account.
I haven't even seen these things.
I know. Don't worry about it. Kaylee has a sticker, though, so you can see hers. So, yeah. So, everybody, just do what you want or don't do anything at all, because just listening is amazing enough. Like, I'm so happy that you all are here. It's been a year, and this is amazing to me that we actually have people who we don't know listening to this podcast.
Yeah, from all over the world.
Yeah.
Which is totally mind-blowing to me.
I know.
I mean, God, what a mind fuck. I mean, like, I'm sorry to swear as much as I have this episode, but like, especially talking about this, like, it's been a year. I had no idea where this was going to go. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to me that people are reaching out on Twitter to me.
Yeah.
I don't understand how fame works. I don't understand how the internet works. Not to say that I'm famous, but maybe I am a little famous.
Oh, honey. Oh.
What? I've had two people follow me on Twitter that I don't know that specifically followed me because of this. Like, I feel like that's the thing. I only have like 6 followers. So
that's amazing. I'm so proud of you. But, you know, actually, speaking of Patreon, this actually kind of dovetails into like our next Unplugged from the Darkness episode, which will be available to all of our Patreon subscribers. We will get a new episode up this week. And it kind of dovetails into the fact that, like, you agreed to do this podcast with me because I have a lot of like random crazy ideas, and you have learned in our marriage that you should just probably say yes and we'll figure it out later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this started as, is I just had this idea and it was born out of a lot of stress in my life, and you just said, okay, sure. And here we are. See, it worked out. It's fine.
We're also literally doing that with the bathroom upstairs.
I know.
Yes, I'm also sure, making a yes, sure, and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah, it's fine. Yes, so we will have part two of this up on Patreon shortly. We will have a new Unplugged from the Darkness up on Patreon shortly, and we will have anything that I can possibly fit in up there as much as possible. Anything that you guys want, just like tell me what you're looking for. I love suggestions. We love reviews too. So whatever platform you're listening to us on, please leave them. It's incredibly helpful for us. So stay tuned for part two of Bryce Lispisa's story. Bryce David Lispisa has been missing from Castaic, California since August 30th, 2013. He was 5'11" and 170 pounds. He has red hair and blue eyes. He has a tattoo of a Taurus bullhead and his birthday in Roman numerals on the upper left arm and pierced ears. Bryce was 19 years old when he went missing. He would be 27 today. If you have any information on Bryce Lispisa's disappearance, please call the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office, 323-890-5500. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com. And again, if you want to hear part two early, it will be on our Patreon page at patreon.com/attwgpod.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro. And I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.